Grihamedisukam.
All types of material happiness based on attachment to family, society, friendship, etc. He, indeed, tucham, insignificant. Kanduyanena, with the itching. Kareyoho, of the two hands, to relieve the itching. Eva, like. Dukkha dukkham, different types of unhappiness into which one is put after such itching sense gratification. Tripyante, become satisfied. Na, never. Iha, in material sense gratification. Kripanaha, the foolish persons. Bahu dukkha bhajaha, subjected to various types of material unhappiness. Kanduvat, if one can learn from such itching. Manusajam, which is simply a mental concoction. Actually, there is no happiness. Vishaheta, and tolerate such itching. Diraha, he can become a most perfect sober person. So, translation. Sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. Grihamedis, so-called grahasthas who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is the source of distress. The kripanas, the fools, who are just the opposite of brahmanas, are not satisfied by repeated sensuous enjoyment. Those who are adhira, however, who are sober, and who can tolerate this itching are not subjected to the sufferings of fools and rascals. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Materialists think that sexual indulgence is the greatest happiness in this material world, and therefore they make elaborate plans to satisfy their senses, especially the genitals. This is generally found everywhere and specifically found in the Western world, where there are regular arrangements to satisfy sex life in different ways. Actually, however, this has not made anyone happy. Even the hippies who have given up all the materialistic comforts of their fathers and grandfathers cannot give up the sensational happiness of sex life. Such persons are described here as kripanas, misers. The human form of life is a great asset, for in this life one can fulfill the goal of existence. Unfortunately, however, because of lack of education and culture, people are victimized by the false happiness of sex life. Balad Maharaj therefore advises one not to be misled by the civilization of sense gratification, and especially not by sex life. Rather, one should be sober, avoid sense gratification, and be Krishna conscious. The lusty person, who is compared to a foolish miser, never gets happiness by sense gratification. The influence of material nature is very difficult to surpass. But as Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, stated by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, the 7th chapter, text 14, Mam eva ye prapajante, mayam etam taranti te. If one voluntarily submits to the lotus feet of Krishna, he can be saved very easily. In reference to the low-grade happiness of sex life, Jivunacharya says in this connection, Yadavadin mama chitta Krishna padaravinde navan navan rasa damanudyata rantum asit atadavati batanari sangame smaryamane bhavat bhavati mukha vikara shushtu nishtivanam cha. Since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought and my lips curl with distaste. Yamunacharya had formerly been a great king who enjoyed sexual happiness in various ways. But since he later engaged himself in the service of the Lord, he enjoyed spiritual bliss and hated to think of sex life. If sexual thoughts came to him, he would spit in disgust. So, Yanmai Tunadi Grihamedi Sukhami Tucham Kandu Yanena Kareori Vadu Kadukam Trip Yantinea Kripanama Huduka Baja Kandu Tivan Manasajam Shaki Tatiraha. So, Om Ganat Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigarave Namaha. So, this desire for sex is there because it is a perverted reflection of the pastimes or the interaction between Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world. As we find in the Bhagavad Gita, the material world is compared to a reflection of the banyan tree, which is seen in the river where the branches are going down and the roots are going up. In other words, it's backwards. It's a perverted reflection or reversed reflection. So whatever is the most elevated thing there, which is the conjugal love between Radha and Krishna, becomes the most contaminated thing here in this world, which is the sexual relationship, any type, you know, man, woman, any of those things, because it's simply based on extreme selfishness. See that? So the point is the relationship between Radha and Krishna is based on extreme selflessness. You understand? Radharani is simply trying to please Krishna. And there are some manifestations that may appear to sahajas like sex life, but they're not actually like that. And but she's simply thinking of Krishna's pleasure. She's willing to go to hell, like the gopis were willing to go to hell to cure Krishna's headache. And in the material world, everybody's just thinking of their own sense, their own pleasure, their own sense, like itching sensation, as Prabhupada said. So the sex desire we have in this world is actually a punishment for being envious of Krishna. We think it's a benediction. And people try to increase it. And another point Prabhupada talked about, people who would kidnap monkeys from Vrindavan. He said they take these monkeys. Any of you have seen monkeys in Vrindavan? Anyone's been to Vrindavan, seen the monkeys? And these monkeys are extremely lusty. So people would take these monkeys from Vrindavan and take the glands out of the monkeys and transplant those glands into their own bodies to increase their sexual desire. And Prabhupada said, they're taking the monkey glands out of one monkey and putting it in another monkey. The problem was comparing the human beings to monkeys. And of course, nowadays, they become more sophisticated at that. Instead of attacking the poor monkeys and taking their glands away, they actually have these pills, you know, through the miracle of modern pharmacology. That means, you know, drugs, for simple words. They have these different pills, and the most popular medicine are those pills. And anyway, I'll mention the name. One of them is called Viagra. And one thing that's very interesting is that anybody who has a computer and they get email, you get all these spam mails. Has anyone experienced this in a computer? Spam mails advertising these different things. Advertising, you know, cheap Viagra or generic Viagra, or we'll teach you how to become more lusty. I mean, every day I got about 30 messages like that I have to send to the junk mail box. And they're always thinking of new ways to send it. You seen that, Vrindavan, too? They're always thinking of new ways. They change the name a little bit. They put funny characters in because in the computer, I have a way to block mails from people I don't want to receive mails. But they keep changing the person who's sending it. And so every day we're bombarded with, I have to spend so much time pressing the delete button and the spam mail button, you know, on the computer. My finger's getting tired after a while. Anyone who uses a computer a lot knows what I'm talking about. And there's no way to avoid it, because they do keep changing the sender's name all the time. So that's a punishment. Why is it a punishment? Because itching is not a pleasant sensation. And then just like when I was young, sometimes we'd get bitten by a mosquito, and the mosquito bite was, you know, unpleasant, so I'd itch it, and then there'd be blood all over the place. You know, and then it created more problems, because there'd be an infection. My mother would always tell me, you know, when you get the mosquito bites, never itch the mosquito, but you can't stop. You know, it's just like, And we're thinking, this is so pleasant to scratch. Isn't it? When you get a mosquito bite, you think, oh, there's nectar. But then you get an infection as a result of that. So it's actually a punishment. And let's tell a story that illustrates this point. How one great sage got punished by sex life. The story is from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a story of Shobari Muni. Shobari Muni was a great sage. And he was meditating. He was so determined he was able to meditate underwater. You know, without breathing, I don't know what he was meditating on, but anyway, he was meditating. And he was very determined, and actually free from sex desire. Then what happened is that he actually became very compassionate to the fish that were in the water. And he was thinking, no, I'm the protector of these fish. So along comes one of Krishna's greatest devotees, Garuda, and starts eating the fish. And Garuda is allowed to eat fish. He's even allowed to eat human beings, as long as they're not Brahmins. There's that story in the Mahabharata that Garuda was asked his father, Kashyapa, what is my food? And his father said, anything you want, except for Brahmins. So one day he went to this village, and he thought, wow, prasadam time. And so he started to eat everyone in the village. It was a village of Nishadas. But what he didn't know was that one of the people there had married, you know, was a Brahmin, and he had married one of the lower class ladies. He moved into the village. And then all of a sudden, Garuda felt a burning sensation in his throat. And he went, must be a Brahmin. Okay, get out, Prabhu. And so the Brahmin got out, and he continued to eat. And then many stories in the Mahabharata, how Garuda ate a giant tortoise as big as the Earth planet, and so many animals and whatever. And that's how Garuda gets his strength. So he's allowed to do that. We're not allowed to eat animals. But different species of life, they're allowed to do that. So anyway, so Garuda was eating some fish, which is perfectly all right. And as a result of that, Shobari Muni got really upset with Garuda and said, if you eat any fish from now on, you die. And Garuda didn't have to be subject to the curse of the sage. But in order to respect the sage, he decided, well, I'm not going to come here anymore. There's plenty of other places to eat fish, other than the Jamuna River. You know, you can go to the whole Atlantic Ocean, Pacific Ocean, everywhere. I mean, there's a lot of fish everywhere. So he left. But the Shobari Muni had committed an offense against a great devotee. He didn't intend to commit an offense, but he committed an offense because he was sentimental, trying to protect these fish against a great devotee. So anyway, so he offended Garuda, and then shortly thereafter, he was trying to meditate in the water, and then he saw two fish engage in conjugal loving affairs, whatever that means with fish. There's two ways that Prabhupada tells the story. One is that he saw the fish doing that. Another one is the fish rubbed by certain parts of his body. But anyway, you get the idea. And then immediately his desire for sexual enjoyment awoken. And he couldn't stay under the water anymore. He dove out of the water. Most people dive into the water. But he dove out the other way. And then he goes to the king, Mandata. And he says to the king, because the king had 50 daughters, so he said to the king, you know, I want to marry one of your daughters. And the king looks at him. And because the sage has been in the water so long, his skin was all wrinkly. I guess he had some, like, seaweed all over his head and everything. You know, practically no woman would want to marry him. So the king looked at him. And he was old, too. You know, he was just an old guy with a bad temper. So the king looked at him and said, what am I going to do? If I say no, he's going to curse me. And if I say yes, my daughters will never agree. This is a problem. Then he thought of a solution. He said to the sage, my dear sage, any one of my daughters who wants to marry you can marry you. So he was thinking, no one's going to want to marry this sage. You know, he's too ugly. So what the sage did, because he had mystic powers, so he used his mystic powers in the wrong way. He turned himself into a young, handsome man. So he goes into the woman's place, you know, the woman's ashram or whatever, and says to the 50 daughters of Mandata, that anyone who wants to can marry me. And the girls look at him, and they say, he's mine, he's mine, he's mine, he's mine, he's mine. And they start to fight each other over him. And he says, that's all right, girls. You can all have me. So in other words, his lust was so great, he wasn't satisfied with one wife. So now 50 wives he had. So he had these 50 wives. And then he enjoyed life with them, or tried to enjoy life with them sometime. And then it went on and on and on. And after a while, he realized, boy, I made a mistake. Because, you know, you have 50 wives, you have to pay for their saris, you have to do so many things. And I guess if you're a sage, you can use your mystic power to manifest saris, but or jewelry and everything like that. I mean, it's not that you just have the wife. I mean, sometimes people get married and they think, well, just have a wife, we'll live simply. And the lady tells that to the man, too. We can just live simply, Prabhu. Just chanting Hare Krishna and worshiping the deities and everything like that. But things expand exponentially. In other words, like I sometimes give the example that a brahmachari has maybe one bag full of stuff, and a brahmacharini has one bag full of stuff, but you put them together and you get several big trucks. It's like a mathematical formula. 1 + 1 = 1,000. Yeah, well, what can I say? It happens like that. Then there's furniture, there's jewelry, and the man is thinking, but I lived so simply before. And the woman is also thinking, I lived so simply before, but now there's so much. There's cars, jewelry, shoes, yeah, 1,000 shoes, like Imelda Marcos. I mean, it just becomes, it's overwhelming after a while, and it never ends. It never ends. I mean, nobody's satisfied with 20 saris, of course, or, you know, anyway, and the man also has his own thing, like his iPhone and everything like that, or whatever the men get into. So it expands. And of course, this is also mentioned, Pumsa Striya Mituni Bhavame Tam Tayor Mato Riddhi Granti Ho Atogra Kshetra Sitapta Vitara Janasya Moho Yama Hamamati. Another verse from the Bhagavatam. So this sage, Shobari Muni, he realized. And then eventually he said to his wives, we're going the wrong direction, Priyas, because there were many. And they all engaged in austerity and they all went back to Godhead, which is a nice story. I mean, there's a happy ending to the story. He didn't take sannyas. That's another important point. He realized that sensual happiness is not the goal of life. So after he overcame the effect of the offense that he committed against Garuda. So the point is, the difference between what's mentioned here is Grihamedi and Grahastha. A Grihamedi, actually Prabhupada describes, Medi means like a bull that's tied by his nose that goes around in a circle. It doesn't go anywhere. It's like in India, sometimes they have these bulls that let's say thresh weed or something like that, and they keep going around and around in circles, and he thinks he's going somewhere. That's like samsara. You know, you think you're going somewhere, but you just end up in the same place. And round and round you go. It's like a merry-go-round. You know what a merry-go-round is? They have that for children. You know, you, get on the merry-go-round and you're riding on a horse. You've seen that?
Yeah.
They have that in Fiji sometimes?
Yeah.
I used to love that when I was a child. Yeah, they put me on the horse. And sometimes you grab a ring as you're going around. But you just end up in the same place. It's crazy. You just end up wherever you started, that's where you end up. So Mandata, he went back to Godhead by the mercy of the devotees. I mean, Garuda forgave him eventually, and he went back to the spiritual world. So the point is, how can we overcome this particular issue? And Krishna is so kind that he gives us certain circumstances that help us overcome these issues. I'll tell a story from the Jiva Dharma that indicates this. Once upon a time, there were two devotees. I mean, they weren't devotees, but anyway, they were living in a holy place, and the man's name was Chandidas, and the woman's name was Damayanti. Okay. And they were married to each other, and they also thought the purpose of life is sense gratification. And their idea was, you know, just acquire more and more money. There's different concepts of sense gratification. You know, some people think enjoying the senses grossly. You know, there's dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, the purusharthas, the goals for ordinary human beings. You know, religious life, being ritualistic, and then after that, dharma, artha, economic development, kama, sense gratification, and finally, you know, liberation, which is actually also self-centered. So these two personalities, they were simply engaged in artha. And that was their sense gratification, just acquiring money. So they were extremely cheap. It's described that they never went on Harinam. Even though they were in a place where everybody was going on Harinam. But the reason they never went on Harinam is because they were afraid that they'd be asked to sponsor it one day. You know, because obviously if you go on Harinam here and someone knows you have money, the devotees will approach you and say, can you sponsor the next or the prasad distribution? So they were afraid of Harinam. It's interesting. So they never went on Harinam, and they were just like keeping all their money buried in their room. And the wife was of the same nature as the husband. And then they started to have children. They had like three children. And the children also developed the same nature as the husband and wife. So what they didn't understand is because the children had the same nature, the children had no love for the parents because they were simply interested in money. Okay. So what happened is that eventually this man retired and his children took over the business. But he still was hoarding all this money in his room, you know, buried in the earth. And he noticed that the children were neglecting him. They were just interested in money. Because what goes around comes around. The example you set for others, they actually act in the same way. So if you want to raise nice children, you have to act like a good devotee so the children will actually copy you. Anyway, so he was noticing the children don't care for us anymore. So he thought, well, the only way he knew to have the children care for him more was to offer them money. He said he gathered all of his sons and his sons' wives. And his sons' wives also became very greedy by association with his sons. So you see, they were all greedy. So he said to them, look, I have a lot of money I haven't given to you yet. And here's the deal. That whoever takes care of me the best will get the money. And so all the sons met after that, sons and their wives met after that, they had a conference. And they said, actually, who knows who the old man is going to give the money to? So much disrespect they had for the father. They said, who knows? Let's just like get rid of him. In a nice way. Send him on pilgrimage, and then somehow or other, like, find all the hidden wealth. And so, then they went in a very nice way to the father the next day, and they say, Pitashri, I think it would be good for you to go on pilgrimage to Sri Mayapur Dham. to Godrum Dweep. Actually, Godrum Dweep is where Bhaktivinoda Thakur set up his house, is one of the most important places in Sri Mayapur. That's where Lord Chaitanya executed many of his leelas. So anyway, so they said, the sons said, we think it would be a good idea for you to go to Godrum Dweep. We'll pay for you to go. And we'll send this nice Vaishnavi with you to take care of you. And so the parents were thinking, finally, they love us. Actually, they love money, not the parents. So what happened is they proceeded to Godrum Dweep, and like halfway there, I think they got to Shantipur or something, or Kuladweep. They got to Kuladweep. They got to Kuladweep, and they got a notice that their sons and daughter-in-laws had broken into their room and stolen all the money that was buried in the earth. And they got very upset. And they were thinking, oh my God, what is the love in this world? We gave them everything, we saved all our money, and look what they're doing to us. And they thought, well, better we renounce this world and become great personalities. So then they proceeded to Godrum Dweep. And after a few days, their attachment for their children returned. And they were thinking, well, if we go back, they actually love us. You know, this is illusion like that. I mean, it's obvious that these children do not love their parents. So, but then the Vaishnavi who went with them said, what are you, crazy? If you go back, they'll kill you. Which was true. And hearing her words, because she was a great pure Vaishnavi, they said, yeah, you're right. And then they stayed in Godrum Dweep executing devotional service. And it's interesting, they learned their lesson by the mercy of Krishna, because they still had a Vaishya mentality. That's true. So they eventually opened up a canteen, or like a small grocery shop. But using now the money from the profit, they were entertaining Vaishnavas every day, which is really nice. And then they had the association of another devotee, Yadavadas, who took them to see the great sages who were performing devotional service on the other banks, on the other side of the Ganges, and they got the association with them, and then they became pure devotees, and eventually went back to home, back to Godhead. So there's a happy ending to that story. So the point I'm making is, yasyaham anugrinami hirishe tadanam shanai, that if one is attached to this world through whatever money or sexual enjoyment or whatever, Krishna makes the arrangement to reveal the naked reality of life. And it's a very heavy thing. Like Prabhupada, he mentioned that too in his famous Vrindavan Bhajan. Prabhupada said that I have my family, my friends and everything, but they are all fruitless glory because I have no money. So it was a similar story with Prabhupada. Very, very similar story with Prabhupada. That Prabhupada's business went down. He lost his money by the arrangement of Krishna. There were some people who stole. Prabhupada was expert, but still Krishna arranged. You may be the most expert person, but Krishna can also arrange that everything falls apart. So everything fell apart, and Prabhupada said, they're a fruitless glory, he says in his Vrindavan Bhajan. In other words, they're not interested in me anymore because I have no money. So it's a very similar story to the story of Damayanti and Chandidas that I just told from the Jiva Dharma. And then Prabhupada was always Krishna conscious. And Prabhupada never had bad qualities. But still, Krishna arranged that so that to bring Prabhupada closer to him. So also, in the story that Prabhupada makes reference to in the purport of Yamunacharya, and we told this story yesterday, or not yesterday, a few days ago, on Ramanujacharya's appearance day, Yamunacharya was engaged in sense gratification too. Remember the story that he defeated the Brahmin who was the king of Chola's priest, and he had this argument with him? Remember the story? Some of you may remember the story. And then he became the king, and he was engaged completely in sense gratification. And basically, his grandfather's disciple had to make a trick to bring him out of that sense gratification by giving him spinach every day, some type of spinach or greens like that. And then he got him out of that particular situation. And once he got out of the situation, then he exhibited something that is described in the Vaishnava literature as the indirect rasa of ghastliness. Just like we have direct rasas. The direct rasas are like the Shanta Ras, Dasha Ras, Sakya Ras, Vatsalya Ras, Madhurya Ras, you know, the five relationships they have. There's also indirect rasas, like humor, a shock, things like that, chivalry. So one of those indirect rasas is ghastliness. Ghastliness means something like disgust with something. So that rasa is exhibited not connected with the direct rasa, the conjugal rasa. We're talking about rasa vas here. But it's exhibited in relationship to one's dealings in the material world. So one comes to the point, by Krishna's mercy, of being disgusted with their previous attachments in the material world. That's actually a sign of spiritual advancement. Of course, we don't go around all day long being disgusted. You know, all day long. It's like, I remember the early days of the movement, the brahmacharis would just like look at the brahmacharinis, yuck. Maya Devi, Durga Devi. That is the opposite side of attachment. You understand? Attachment and aversion are actually the same thing. They're just like the coin that has two sides. You know, heads or tails, as they say. Yeah. So it's the same thing. If someone is so disgusted, that means they're attached. But the reason for Jamunacharya's disgust with sense gratification was because it interfered with the happiness that he was getting from spiritual life. This is the whole point. It's not that simply he was spitting at these things, but he was so happy that whenever he thought of this material enjoyment, it actually diminished the happiness of Krishna consciousness. And that's a fact. One's spiritual happiness goes down the more one engages or even thinks of sense gratification. So if you want to be happy, that's the way you do it. You give up the thought of all sense gratification. So that's called Raso Vajram, Rasopyasa, Param Drishta Nivartite. Having a higher taste, one becomes fixed in consciousness. So this particular verse and this particular purport is not a criticism of grahasthas. A grahastha is one who executes devotional service to please Krishna along with his wife. And it's also described in the Jiva Dharma. These sages, the Babaji's, were asked, their renounced souls, they were asked, what's better, to be a grahastha or a renunciate? And they said, basically, you know, what Lord Chaitanya said, kiva vipra kiva nyasi shudra kiti na yeka shantara veda se guruha. If someone is Krishna conscious, it doesn't matter. So a bona fide grahastha sees his wife as a maidservant of Krishna. That's actually the point. Rather than seeing the wife as an instrument of sense gratification, because that's exploitation. It's like when the British brought people here to work in the sugarcane fields, that was exploitation, selfishness, slavery, wasn't it? A horrible thing. Horrible. So if a man gets married, so he has someone just to cook for him, provide his sense gratification, that's the same thing. You know, we criticize the British, but we can also criticize a man who has that mentality towards his wife. So the mentality should be, she's a maidservant of Krishna and will serve Krishna together in this way. And in that way, someone is actually a grahastha. And we need good grahasthas, and we have many good grahasthas in our movement like that. So this is not this verse purport is not to decry or criticize grahastha life. It's to criticize Grihamedi life, because Grihamedi life, there isn't any love. In Grihamedi life, they're using each other for sense gratification. I scratch your back, you scratch my back. It's business, vaniya arrangement, isn't it? You give me saris, and you give me sense gratification. You know, it's just abominable. When I deal with people, I want people to have loving relationships, to care about each other. So we are interested in love in Krishna consciousness. But you love someone by being concerned with their spiritual life. Or, as they say, ask not what the other person can do for you, but what you can do for the other person. That's, every relationship should be like that. Whether it's a marriage relationship, a friendship relationship, a service relationship, we should always be thinking of the other person's welfare, not of using the other person for our own nefarious purposes. Otherwise, it's like the British. Not all British, I'm not criticizing the whole country, but what the British did here in Fiji, and also they did in Africa, they did everywhere, isn't it? It's horrible. It's horrible. I mean, it's horrible. Or what the Japanese did in World War II. The Japanese took all these Chinese ladies and Korean ladies and engaged them in slaves for their soldiers, you know, to gratify the soldiers' senses. Some of you may know about this. Horrible. So we should not be exploiting people in the name of love. We should be loving people in the name of love, which means concern for them. And that's Krishna consciousness. So, on that happy note, any questions, quick questions, or comments? Yes, Bhakti.
What about
this
British rules come to this form? How can we overcome?
How can we what?
If this British rules come to this form, how can we overcome?
The British rules?
If you have entered, it has entered.
I don't know about that. I mean, we're not bringing people to work in the sugarcane fields, are we? Anyway, the point I'm making is whatever relationship we have with people should be out of concern and love for them. I mean, everything else is secondary. Even in the movement, you know, the most important thing is not money. The most important thing is not, you know, how many rotis you can eat in the morning. The most important thing is the other devotees serving. Jivaras rupohai nichakriti. That we're servants of others. In any relationship, I'm not just talking about grahastha relationship or temple relationship, but any relationship you have should be a relationship of real love. And what masquerades as love in this world now is lust. That's why there's so many divorces and remarriages and divorces and remarriages. You know, all your Bollywood stars, not all of them, but many of your Bollywood stars, they just have so many marriages, isn't it? And then you open up your Fiji Sun or your Fiji Times, and half of it's filled with pictures of naked, half-naked women. And the other half is filled with pictures of sports stars. And maybe there's two pages of news. Isn't it? Two pages of news and half of it's naked women and sports stars. You know, what is the use? It's all exploitation. And these sports stars are being exploited too. It's like the Romans used to put people in the Colosseum. They used to put the Christians in the Colosseum and have them fight the lions. You ever hear about this before? And so, you know, it's just another version of the same thing, that we're enjoying our senses in a gross way as we're watching it. You know, just like last night, I was hearing all this grunting and groaning and screaming. As I was trying to sleep all night, it was like, ah, ah! Did anybody hear that last night? Yeah, I was trying to get a good night's sleep so I could serve Krishna. I was thinking, someone's getting attacked out there. I was ready to run out with a stick to defend them. But it was just like, enjoying the senses like animals, you know. Woo! Yeah! We won! What a waste of the human form of life. I thought it was coming from the ashram. Maybe some of it was.
Let me... Not that.
I know. All right, on that happy note,
we can end class. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.